Welcome to the Tea and Trails podcast. How are you doing? Happy long run day. Happy half term. Well, half term is rolling on and on. I'd like to say just happy, 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 but yeah, maybe it's not for some of you. Thanks to all our partners and Patreons too. We have Precision Fuel and Hydration, Precision Fuel and Hydration even, Tiki Boo, Mountain Fuel, Outdoor Active, Velaforte, Silver, Active Route, The Centurion Running Store, Protein Rebels, SportJuice.com, Big Bobble Hats, X Miles, Bonside Farm Cottages, and Ugoku Projects. Also, we've got a new Patreon perk for you. Thanks to Red Bear Sports for reaching out and coming on board our Patreon. What is it? The Patreon train? The Patreon gang?
All aboard the Patreon train. Ooh.
Also, maybe even treat yourself over to something crazy if you would like some awesome tea and trails merch.
Welcome to episode 45. Like the number 45. It's your age.
Any reason?
Minus a few years. Just like a clear number, 45. This week, we talked to Neil McMickle. You'll know why we talked to him. All about Lakeland 100, Bob Graham Round, and being that slightly older athlete. We have brew with the coaches, Tales from the Trails, and our weekly catch up. Thank you so much to Precision Fuel and Hydration, who are sponsoring the show this week. Don't forget, patrons get 15% off, and anyone can get 15% off their first order with the code all caps T and Trails 15. And for text, that's T and Trails 15. Thanks to all our Patreon partners and sponsors for supporting the T and Trails podcast. You can find all their links at www.tandtrails.com or in the show notes. It's relief because we don't really enjoy that bit, do we, Gary? It's relief when that's done and we can just now freestyle, ad lib, make crude jokes and just let it flow.
And relax.
How are you doing? I'm going to try not to move too much so that my audio is crystal clear, but I'm also absolutely freezing.
We should get those little the gamer mics. Into one of those.
No, because the whole time I'd be going, you gotta work. Ooh, yeah. I would just be singing along. One of my favorite things to do when I was young and carefree was to go, when we went out to bars and clubs, was to get a straw and make it look like a mic. And then, so you put it there, twirl it round.
What a wild night that must have
been. That used to be my party trick. And then if Britney came on,
I could just see you and Theresa May skipping through the cornfields. Was that the wildest thing that she ever did?
I was arrested once. I was in the back of a police car for digging up a pot plant, Gary. I've been wild in my time. Don't you worry. Classic. We'll talk about wild. What have you been doing? Clubbing? Down Clute? Down Rixie's?
Oh, wow, Clute. I've never been in Clute, actually. I should.
One day, Gary, I'll take you down Clute.
But about 11 o'clock, I just start nodding into my pint. That's about me.
We'd have to go for the early sitting now. It's the 6 p.m.
Yeah. I thought I would share with you, though, actually. I didn't really talk about it last week with my Precision Fuel and Hydration case study.
I didn't share.
Yeah. Well, it's good they give you some feedback. I just was so fixated on my, was it 3 out of 5?
You were so upset about Robin's 4 out of 5 and yours 3 out of 5. That's what you're talking
Well, maybe about. This actually alludes to why they were a bit questioning my data, because my sodium per hour was really low over the whole week. So if I was correct with the data, I don't think I missed anything out, but maybe I did. But yeah, I was like probably at least half of what they'd recommended I should be taking. So yeah, I was fighting a losing battle. And also I didn't have really much caffeine at all. And that's, I don't know if you know the difference between this. So you know, if you take a caffeine supplement, is that different? Mm. Because basically, I don't want to take caffeine and then
is
be running to the bushes.
Is that different to a cup of tea? Is that what you're going to ask?
Yeah, as far as, will it trigger anything? Because I stayed well away from caffeine.
I need to wean myself slightly off the caffeine, because often when I go and do a long race, I get like a caffeine headache because I'm so used to having like 8 cups of tea a day. And then when you're out all day, you haven't got that tea. It's something I'm going to ask sports scientist Emily. I'm going to actually ask her that and say, let's talk about the effect caffeine has on races, when to use it, and how much. And yes, can I just have a cup of tea? cup of coffee, because if you've done a really long race, you'll know actually if you have a cup of tea or really strong coffee, I actually feel the hit much more from that than caffeine in a gel. I don't really notice caffeine in a gel. So.
Yeah, it's interesting. So I wonder if there are slightly different how your body reacts, because if I, so Friday, Saturday, when I was in Glasgow, I went wild and had two cups of coffee and it destroyed me. Saturday evening, I had quite a few toilet breaks and the toilet breaks when you're asleep, but I had to get up quite a few times for the toilet. And then on our long run on Sunday, I must still have about five wins.
I missed what you said. Did you say two coffees?
Yeah, two coffees.
You had two coffees and it had that effect on you?
Yeah, absolutely destroyed
you need
me.
You need to sort yourself out, Carrie. You should be having two coffees before breakfast.
It could have been something else completely different that I've not actually acknowledged, but I'm pretty sure the only real significant thing that was different was the two coffees, because I pretty much don't drink that kind of caffeine. I love cups of tea. And yeah, it did not almost, oh my goodness me, how many weeks?
Anyway, no.
But it's super interesting. So it's not just your numbers, they offer up recommendations too. And yeah, if you want to book a call with one of the experts over Precision Fuel and Hydration, all the bits and bobs are in the show notes. I'm going to say it again, my Innovate Jacket review has been doing really well.
We all know why. How many people heard me talking about it and when I'm going to go and check that out?
I never did it. I should have done it. I was going to just take loads of pictures of me emphasizing my wedding room. But I think it's not particularly because it's a good review. I just think it's this time of year and people are thinking, oh yeah, I might need a water.
No, I think it is a good review. And also there are loads of water. It's a really big investment, a jacket. More than a pair of trainers, more than anything else you're going to buy, because you only really want to buy one every like 10, 15 years. They're really expensive. And the amount of time you wear them, though it's quite concentrated in the winter, you're not then. But also there's like a life-saving bit of kit, aren't there? You know, if you've got your jacket and you're heading up into the hills, you want that jacket to be waterproof. You want it to be warm. You want it to be bombproof. And you want it to know it's going to last and it's going to do that job again and again and again. So if I was looking for a new jacket, I'd be checking out your review, Gary, to see. And there's not many, like if you type in like, I'm a Montane Spine jacket girl. I've got two. I love them. I like the female fit on them. I like the hood. But if I was like looking for another one, like comparing them, it's really, there's not people that like, so I think you've done jolly well with
thank
it.
You. Also though, I've got another one, New Balance Fuel Cell Supercomb Trail Review that is live now. And yeah, worth a look if you are basically a trail super shoe with a carbon plated midsole.
Can we have are you allowed to tell us what you thought, or are you going to?
Is it a thumbs up or a thumbs down?
Should we leave it a week? And then people will go,
Well, it's live. It's out now. And we record this on Tuesday. And obviously the show goes out on Friday. So yeah, it's not really a spoiler. Thumbs up. I said in the review, because they haven't got huge grip, huge lugs, although the Mega Grip, the Vibra Mega Grip is ace on like wet rocks and stuff like that. It's pretty good as far as rubbers out there. I think maybe MV and VJ might give them a run for their money with that kind of butyl rubber. But they're only like 3 mil lugs. So if it's super wet and muddy, maybe leave them at home. But then on a race like, say, Spine or Lakeland 100, where there's a load of different terrains, I think I'd take 20 minutes of slipping and sliding for all that runnable stuff.
I don't think on the Spine you'd get your comeback from a carbon shoe because of the pace that you're going.
True, that's a good point.
I don't think that you'd be able to, I don't know, maybe Damien would.
I've ditched my, when I said if it was the Lakeland 100 tomorrow, I'd wear the Hooker Tecton, no problem.
You've gone.
The new balance
have changed.
I'm so fickle. But yeah, it is really
good, super
impressive.
I've never heard them. I've never seen anyone wearing them like on social media. Yeah. So that's really interesting to hear what you said. You know, we talked a little bit about what shoe I was going to wear, but I'm so happy with my North Face ones that I wear. I was thinking about it. The lugs are good. Seeing people's pictures of the recce's. They are waist deep in water on some parts.
I hope it dries out. I can't believe from the north.
I love it because I'm going to have you with a towel at the end of that bit.
It is absolutely wild how much water there's been so far in the UK.
Oh, water. Yeah. Anyway, sorry, carry on. Let's do you.
I've been doing some workouts though.
I knew it.
I did. What did I do? So the 10 times 1 minute, we talked about it last week anyway, but I did complete those workouts. 10 times 1 minute with a 1 minute jog walk recovery. Nice to run fast, but not be absolutely rinsed. I went on the treadmill and did my 15% incline, watching episode 2 of At Home with the Furies. And it was just a 10 minute at threshold pace, whatever that is. Actually, I'm not too sure what the gap was, actually. I was so relaxed because normally I would then do a manual activity on Strava just so you could actually record the elevation. I didn't do any of that. Didn't bother with any of that.
Yeah. How are you feeling about that now? Are you still wanting okay. date? But then all your Strava week is like skewed. The data is all skewed forever. People will judge. They'll think.
Judgy. Well, I'm in a group actually with our friends. It was, I think it's called Slay the Dragon because they wanted to get more elevation than me over the year. But we're doing Dragon's Back Race. Wow, I had a massive advantage basically that week. So yeah, I'm pretty mindful. I was pretty mindful about the elevation, but taking my eye off the game. Maybe I'll have to look at the data. I might go back and recreate an activity. I don't know.
You all know he's going to do that.
I did a long run on Sunday and I said it was going to be 2 hours, but it ended up being like 2 hours, 40 minutes. And we stopped for a scone break, maybe 3 miles from home. And I thought of Fran. She would be, she would have been raging if I was like, Fran, do you want to go for a little break, a little scone before we stop our run? And yeah, she would not have enjoyed it, but lovely, lovely cheese scone. I'm back in the gym. It was so bizarre because it must be like 2 months since I've been to the gym. If I think about Dragon's Back Race, definitely. So that was September, October. Wow, I don't even think I went after Lakeland 100. So it's been a long time, but yeah, it just felt like I was in there 3 days ago. It was absolutely wild. Nothing had changed. I was the dude who cranked the treadmill up to 15%. Nobody else is doing that. But I really enjoyed it because sometimes when you load the weight up, your form might suffer. And because I'm keeping the weight light for this period of time, do my reverse lunges. Yeah, it could get really... You get really deep. It was good. I really, really enjoyed it. And I did 2 strength sessions at home too. So all in all, as far as workouts concerned, I think that's a pretty good week.
Yeah, at least 15 minutes of work, Gary.
And then on Saturday, I went to Glasgow to the School of Art with my daughter. Luckily, we checked because Esme and I both thought it was Friday we were going. Turns out it was Saturday. So that would have been a nightmare. I think it's probably different with different courses that you study, but I love going to studios, workshops, art studios. I just thought, oh my goodness, mate, it would be just amazing to be studying again and to do art.
No, don't you wish you could study again? Do you feel like, oh, I wish I could learn something?
My education was at art school, so it was pretty similar to what Esme's doing, although not the same quality of institute that Esme's hopefully going to go to. Yeah, it was just magical. And Glasgow, wow, what a city. Every time I go to Scotland, I have a wonderful time. And it's far enough for Esme to go where she's away from her parents, but close enough that we could...
She can come home for a weekend without a mega journey. Yeah.
And I've got a cold again. That's ending on a downer. I gave Lisa a cold, then she has now given me it back. So I went from feeling really good up and about last week to coughing. So I'm going to, and again.
Stop all the snogging and then this cold was just.
The heavy petting.
Passing this cold back and forth.
To and forth, yeah. But that was it. You know, it's a good, it was nice to get back to some running, but no real heavy lifting mentally as far as the workouts are concerned. So they're quite easy to do. And like a social long run on Sunday. Who doesn't love that, hey? Wonderful.
When you go over your allotted time for the long runs, do you start getting the guilt, anxiety and messaging and going,
I think if I had a coach, then that would be different because there would be...
Like you went longer, but I always like when I go for my long run, when the kids are at home, I try and do my long run during the week.
Oh, so, I see. Yeah.
Yeah. But when I go out the weekend, then I'll be 3 hours, but I'm always like I'm never 3 hours. Yeah. And I think probably Bryn knows that he just doesn't even look at the time because...
Well, my children are older, so I don't have to...
They're not even bothered.
They can just stay at home. I don't even think George is out of bed. So...
Well, we're getting to that stage now because we're in our second week of half term now and nobody's coming down the stairs. No one is coming down the stairs now before, I mean, the two older ones, it's 9 o'clock. 9 o'clock, oh. Harry. I come down, they go, I say, and I hear my mum. Well, that's half the day gone already, isn't it? Come on, breakfast is going to be cleared away in a minute. Come on.
You've been up since six.
Let's face it, I haven't. I haven't been up since six. I'm like, lie in bed. I look at the clock and I'm like, oh, I could get up and be mindful and meditate and drink lemon water. Or I could just go back to sleep. That's what I do.
Lemon water. Cool. So how are you doing then?
Last week I had, recovery 4 days when I was single parenting and I thought, you know, I've timed this perfectly because I had family staying, I've got the kids, not got time. I've done 5 weeks of top-notch training. Tick that box. Well done, Eddie. So I thought a couple of days, I have no problem taking downtime and not running. I relish it. And it rained the whole time. So I was like, oh, I've won this. But do you know what, Gary? It hasn't stopped raining since then. And now it's not only raining, it's sleeting. I can see, like, just if I look out my door and raise my eyes just 20 degrees, the snow is there, which is a little bit early for me, Gary, because once the snow falls on those higher trails, they're gone. They're gone to me. And then I'm stuck on the same bit of trail. Won't complain. It's a lovely bit of trail.
Is it noisy when we go to the lakes and all that rain coming off the fells and the mountains? You can just hear the noise.
The rage of the river. It really messes with my podcast listening because I have to turn it up really loud in order to hear you talking. And then when you come off by the water and you like move away, it's suddenly like, oh my God, it's so loud. Jeez, it's loud. So it was a good view. My God, my HRV, it was like, it loved not running. It was like, so normally it's very individual HRV. So don't compare HRV. Normally mine's in like the 40s, and then the 3 days of not running, it was like 68.
Oh, well, I'm going to check up mine is HRV. It's balanced. Drum roll, 42.
Oh, yeah. So it's about the same. That's what mine is. Then 4 days of non running, it was like really, oh my God, is that so? Oops. Then it immediately went back down into, and it doesn't seem to make any, like I do mega long run. I sleep more. Does it make any difference? No. Like running is the thing that kills it. That just so bad for you. It's so bad.
Because when I don't run, I'm like usually say Dragon's Back Race or Lakeland 100. I'm pretty smashed up and recovering. So I've never had that kind of.
You've never done a little few down day. So
I need a week off, don't I? Oh, wow. Yeah. Just take a
week off actually being healthy rather than not doing anything. Anyway, then I was reunited with my wonderful husband. And so I picked the training first. Run back. I went out. I was so excited. And in the afternoon, freedom, silence. No, mummy. Watch the routine. Is that how you do it? Is that how you swivel the book? So I went off thinking, oh my gosh, I've had like 4 days with only like 10 miles over those 4 days. I am going to be flying. Oh my God, Gary, I felt terrible. I felt terrible more in like I was like, oh, I could run up this little. I have all these little bits, which is probably really bad on my like 10 mile routes where if I'm feeling good, I can run them or mentally on it, but it's so easy to walk them as well. And it's not that much quicker to run them. And so I was just so lazy. I was like, I'm just going to walk. I'm just enjoying this so much. So I did it, Gary. I was like, do you know what? I'm just going to walk. I'm going to jog. I'm going to take photos. I'm going to sit with Lindy and have some smooches. I'm not going to rush. So I enjoyed that. Then the next day I decided, right, Eddie, I need to be more consistent with my strength work and actually go away from the children in order to do it, because it's great to do it here when I'm busy and when I'm at home and I just need to quickly 20 minutes, bam, bam, bam. But actually my really good sessions I do in the gym. So I went down, had a chat with the gym lady, and I just joined up until the 6th of December, paid money. It's always good to pay money. And then I have to go twice a week because I paid good money. I've already paid it. Let's get there. Let's get down there. So Saturday. So my plan in this experiment on one person, which is me for this 200 mile race, was once a week, I'm going to go do run, gym, run. There's some studies saying that if you run after strength work, that the impact then creates this huge muscle breakdown, which means you come back then stronger because the sort of like the running afterwards signals to your body that it needs to recover.
Is there any structure to the runs though? Are they running to the gym?
This is what I did. So I jogged down to the gym, which is 2.5 miles. It's great because it's downhill as well. Well, still got the tiny little uphill. So it takes about 20 minutes. So you're nice and warmed up to the gym. Got to the gym. This is a side story to the actual story. But when I got to the gym, there were other people in there, which is very rare. And there was one girl, young girl. She was squatting 120 kilograms.
Oh, my goodness me.
She was about seven. Anyway, then I realized who it was. And it's the world slalom champion. The bar was like bending. Whoa. So of course, I was like, oh, my God. I was just staring at her going, oh, that looks, there I was with my 60 kilograms.
There's some super strong people out there. I never judge anybody. I've seen some people doing.
I judged a little. I judged a little because I was like, oh, were you putting all that, like, who are? And then when she turned around, I saw who it was. And I was like, oh, I know who you are.
Yeah.
You're a mate. So then I just fangirled her a little. And I was like, oh, what are you doing? Where are you going training? What are you doing?
Instagram follower.
I'm Eddie. that was good. I love it. I thought I was doing really well. No, I wasn't. Anyway, so I did a good session. I didn't do my super heavy weights. I was like medium weight. But what I did, which I think absolutely killed me, was I went on the BOSU ball. So I always try and do stuff down the gym that I can't do at home. And I don't have a BOSU ball, which is like a half ball on a flat.
Okay.
They're really good, but they're really expensive. So I've never bought one.
Yeah.
So I did some side squats with weights on and off the BOSU ball, holding when you're wobbling all over the place. And everything else I've been doing at home. So like squats, step ups. I did like press ups to upright, like normal gym stuff. That was the only thing I don't normally do. Anyway, then I did an hour and a bit run off back home, the long way home, which was ended up being just under 8 miles and 1,000 feet of climbing. Really super easy.
Could I ask you, why would you use the ball? Would that, because it would engage lots of other
stability? Yeah, exactly. It's core, it's ankle, it's, you're getting loads of bang for your buck, basically. So then I fueled during that run because I thought, also I was really hungry. Anyway, rest of the day, had to go and have a nap after that. The next day I had my long run, Gary. I was at the DOMS was so bad. Like I couldn't even get my shoes on to go for the long run. Like even lifting my leg, I was like, it was like inner thighs were, sorry to talk about my inner thighs. They were so sore, not my glutes, not anything else, just my inner thighs. But they were like, so we're so sore. I couldn't bend down. There was literally no bend. So the wild wee that I had to do halfway through my long run, I just had to stand and just let it flow.
Oh, my goodness. Your trainers don't smell.
I dropped my Villaforte packet on the floor and I was like, oh, oh. So I had to like swivel round and like straight leg round to try and get it. And you'd think like it would wear off. So you'd think, I'm just really sore, but as the run gets good, but the whole run, I mean, my WhatsApp stream of messages to Bryn was like, oh my God, this is terrible. And brilliant. He'd be like, you'll get better. Keep going. Oh, it still really hurts. Oh my God, I just weed down my leg. That's it. I'm coming home. Anyway, I couldn't go up any big hills because my legs were so, like lifting my leg up was so sore. So I just had to track around this bit of track, like it says a couple of miles, fire tracks, just to get around. I saw the same hikers about 800 times. I'd be like, what is that crazy? What is that crazy? Anyway, I was still, then the next day, I did an easy 90 minutes thinking, it was still sore. I honestly, it was so bad, Gary. There's a step in our house that goes from like the sitting room down into the kitchen. And I'd have to reverse step down because the
it's like Marathon Tuesday, isn't it? The second Tuesday dance.
No, it was almost like I'd done a massive rip. I was like, what the hell? I didn't feel embarrassed, so I felt kind of proud that I'd really done one on myself. Anyway, today was the first day I got out of bed with just the normal aches and pains. I was going to gym last night, but I did yoga last night because I thought, I can't, it's still half term here. I can't keep going. Evie was like, come and play in the river. And I was like, I can't get down the bank, Evie. Anyway, awesome. I will persevere. Hopefully, I will not be as stiff when I get to the gym either tonight or tomorrow.
That is one thing with the gym, though. It doesn't take long before you condition yourself up for those.
Yeah, that's what I'm telling myself. A little bit of conditioning, but it's okay. So important. I did a session this morning and with my lovely husband. He joined me for the second half, which was lovely. And he said to me, you looked really compact. And I thought, yeah, that's what I want. That's good. That's good. That's what I want. Yes. I want to be this little compact little ball of muscle.
A little strong unit. Yeah,
just a unit of sore Dom's muscle at the moment, but it's going to get better. So hopefully this time next week, I'll go, I've been back to the gym again. And the next day it wasn't so bad. So courage, if you're heading to the gym or restarting gym, or if you're going to side lunge off a Bosu ball with dumbbells, just don't do, maybe I did too many. Maybe my inner thighs are weak. Anyway, it's good. And I'm going to carry on. I'm going to keep that run, gym, run. Probably it's quite a good thing to do on a Saturday. Just that run off the gym on tired legs is just so good. And for me, it's really good because it's all uphill. It adds a strength element, but I think also it's like, it means you'll run slower, slightly takes away the injury risk of like running faster on tired legs because I can't because I'm uphill. So I feel that, I think that was good. Good start to the week. And now we've got 42 days until the Winter 200. So we are totally...
Clock's ticking.
Is me and my friend saying to each other, the hashtag laser focused. So every day counts, Gary, now. You can't have an off day now. The next 30 days are actually counting. You know when you're like... Oh, twittering on that. You know when you're like 12 weeks out from a race? 16 weeks. Like, you can have I don't feel
tomorrow.
Tomorrow, I'll move that. But when you're like 5-6 weeks out, you're like, this actually counts. And you get the old,
I start asking myself, everything I do could be, say, food or exercise or socially or pretty much anything. Will that improve my marathon time, or will that improve my Lakeland 100 time? I start asking those questions, and it works quite well actually, because quite often it's like put the beer back in the fridge.
Put the beer back in the fridge. Take the hand out of the cookie jar.
Yeah, I love our little catch ups, Eddie. You know,
you're always so enthusiastic when I'm telling all my stuff. You're like the only person that maybe it's all just a big act.
Well, we go in hardcore Monday or Tuesday or Wednesday whenever we're recording. It's like, could be more hours, 4 hours or whatever sometimes. And then for the rest of the week, it's like pretty much not a lot goes on. So it's always good to, have a catch up. But another bit I love is Brew with the Coaches. And this week's question comes from Patreon, Yannick Biancini. After seeing Damien Hall's post about the use of sauna for height acclimation as a preparation for his CMUR, I was wondering if that really works and what's the protocol. What could I do that's affordable without living in the mountains before a race in the Alps, which goes over 3,000 meters a few times? Thanks, Yannick.
Okay, so this is a principle or an evidence of cross-tolerance, so whereby you're training in one environment in the hope that that translates into benefits in another environment. So you're increasing your tolerance to heat in the hope that that increases your tolerance to altitude. And the principle behind this is that altitude is obviously a lower oxygen environment, and therefore our bodies work harder to transport blood and oxygen to our muscles. So anything we can do to increase the utilization of oxygen and the transport of oxygen at altitude should help us with our performance. So the way heat training would work for that is that there is some improvements in your body blood volume, for example, so your plasma volume and sort of therefore red cell production and all those sorts of things that go alongside that. And whether or not that then helps you have more oxygen transport capacity at altitude. And therefore use of a sauna in theory, yes, that's a hot environment and that could then translate into improvements at altitude. I think the difficulty with it is the protocol. From what I looked into, and I admit I'm not an expert on this, and I think the evidence is sort of quite sparse on this, really. It's been investigated for team sports, for example, whereby they may have a tournament at altitude. And what can they do if they're a team which is based in lowlands? But for ultras, I couldn't find any specific evidence. So I'm not entirely sure what the exact protocol would be, but it would be similar to what you would do if you were using the sauna for heat acclimatization, where you would do a period of time each day for a block of time. So maybe up to 10 to 12 days or something like that was the protocol that I was looking at. But that was involving people actually exercising in a heat environment rather than just sitting in a sauna. So the evidence is not directly applicable to ultramarathons, but in theory, that's how the science sort of behind it works. You increase your blood volume essentially, and therefore you increase your oxygen capacity. That's therefore going to increase your performance at altitude. But I will be interested to look at what Damien Hall actually did do and what the protocol was for him and how successful he felt it was.
And the sort of protocol for runners, if you're going to, this is more maybe now looking at if you're going to compete somewhere hot and you want to acclimatize a little bit before you go. I know some of the Great Britain 24-hour runners are doing this because they have got to acclimatize to some hot weather in December, which isn't obviously going to be easy to do in the UK. It's advised to do this about 4 to 6 weeks before your big race, is to spend some time in a sauna, not exercising, but sitting in a sauna, to do that between about 5 to 7 days, and then you can stop doing that terrible torture. And then maybe just before you go, or perhaps when you arrive a week before your race, you can do 2 to 3 days of heat acclimatization as well, and the body will remember what it's supposed to do and you will adapt quicker to the hotter weather. My big thing on this is that those 4 to 6 weeks when you're meant to be doing this heat acclimatization is also probably when you're in your biggest volume of training. So your body is not only being stressed, perhaps doing your longest runs, perhaps doing back-to-back runs, perhaps your biggest volume weeks, but then you're also going into a sauna and losing your whole body weight in fluid and everything. So the getting the balance right, if you're not a professional athlete or elite athlete who can then go home and rehydrate and, you know, watch At Home with the Furies, terrible program, I'd never watch that, back to back and refuel. I think the added stress, and we must remember that going sitting in a sauna is a big stress. You know, it's equivalent of doing a hard session to your body. So doing that in that period of when you're also trying to do your high volume is a high risk strategy. And Trish and I have talked a little bit about actually what we'd probably advise some of our athletes to do anyway. So that's what if you are looking at heat acclimatization, that we should do. The only other thing I'd say to you, Yannick, is a lot of the races which do go over 3,000 meters, you will obviously, you're going to feel breathless. You're going to have maybe a little bit of altitude sickness. You might find taking on fuel higher level harder, making decisions harder. But often these races go up and then come down very quickly as well. The actual time you spend up high is quite limited. So don't let that be like an overriding factor in your training, because though you might go up, you feel it when it goes over 2,000 meters and you're breathless, you're quite quickly then will be coming down as well with a lot of these races, because they're climbs and then descents. So don't let that be like a key worry in your training. Much, much better to have stronger legs and to be fit than to be worrying too much about that. Trish, now the sensible chat.
I totally agree with Eddie there in terms of that period when you do that sauna piece would be in a key part of training where, you know, we're not full-time athletes, but, and you only have a certain amount of time in the day. And, you know, bear in mind, you're doing all of your hardest block of training. You're trying to get your strength working. I mean, I really struggle to get my strength working when I'm in that specific phase, because it's just, you're so busy. You know, so the whole sauna thing, yeah, you know, again, like Rebecca said, I personally, I think the evidence isn't there to make a massive difference in terms of height acclimatization. I would put my more of my eggs in the basket of working on fitness. So I'd say fitness first, put that time into getting better, increasing your VO2 max, which will make a big difference, and strength. Like, you're going to be climbing mountains, so you need a lot of strength for that in your legs, particularly, and your core. So I would say that time is better spent, as opposed to being in the sauna, to working on those areas and recovery. You know, we forget about recovery, but it's going to be even more difficult to recover if you're doing a hard session, going into the sauna, dehydrating, probably not then going to be totally hydrated and ready to go for your next hard session. So I would maybe focus on your fitness and your strength work. That would be my top tip for that. What else could you potentially do? Well, you could go to the Alps. I don't know if you're able to maybe put in a little bit of a holiday before the race, but that would definitely help in terms of specificity and, you know, giving yourself a little bit of time to acclimatize to that environment if you have the ability to do that before the race. If not, like Eddie said, you're not going to be spending the whole race at that level. So the difference I think it will make is minimal in terms of the returns that you will get instead from focusing on your fitness and your strength work.
How do the Danish and the Swedes and the Norwegians sit in their saunas every day? Is it just is it their thinner blood? What? Because I read something about that they have thinner blood than us. Would that be right, Rebecca? And so that they can, or is it thicker blood?
I'm not entirely sure.
Oh, they haven't
never heard that.
They love to sauna.
Well, I know I've got a lot of family in Finland. They do have them in their properties, but they don't go in every day. Not the ones I know anyway.
Don't break the dream of mine, Gary.
Sorry. What about though a race like maybe Hard Rock, because that does start high and you high all the time?
A lot of those guys do go over earlier though, don't they? They go over earlier and acclimatize for that. So I think it just comes down to, again, like there's a reality, isn't there? You know, there's a massive discrepancy between being an elite athlete and your average Joe who's trying to balance all of this stuff plus do the best they can.
Yeah.
And I think you've just got to, pick what you can do. You can't do everything, can you? So I think we just need to kind of focus on what we can. But yeah, like Hard Rock, I think, you know, you kind of suck that up, don't you?
I think a race like that, if you're going to commit to the travel and the cost of that, then you go out, because that is above... Oh, that's above 3,000, isn't that? It's something ridiculous.
At 4,000, isn't it? I think
it's up to 4,000. That's a big deal. But I do think, like in the Alps, I think because so much of it is up and down, and I know, like, people that if you've done like UTMB or CCC, it does go high, but it's only those specific bits of the climbs. Like maybe like Col Ferret, when you feel it, you go above 2,000 meters and you feel it, but it's for like 40 minutes of the race and then you can drop back down and you'll feel better again. So I think as well, knowing that is if you're going to do a race at the sort of French, maybe in the French Alps or the Pyrenees, that you might feel rough as you climb up higher. And that's why it's quite good as well to have on your watch how high you are, because it'll just reassure you as well if you suddenly you feel breathless or dizzy or you get a headache, that you are that bit higher and that it will soon pass and that you just have to just keep nibbling on food, keep the fluids going, get up to that coal quicker and then drop off as soon as you can as well to get back to the land of oxygen.
I don't know about you, but I get these kind of questions from clients like quite a lot, and it's 9 times out of 10. It is, they just want a kind of quick, like, I do this magic thing and it'll increase my performance. Whereas in reality, you might do like 0.01%, you know, and you've spent like 6 hours of your week trying to do it.
Well, exactly. Why not go to bed earlier and get that better recovery?
Harry, we don't need to say any of that. Yannick, go to bed an hour earlier.
Yeah, don't get shit-faced on Uzu.
Hope that helped both you and everybody listening. Yannick, thanks, Rebecca and Trish. And don't forget, if you're a patron, you can send your questions for the coaches. We will be recording again before too long. Send them to hello@tntrails.com.
This week's guest is Neil McNichol. It's such a treat to sit down with Neil. I do get a bit of bants about the rivalry, the V50 rivalry. But the truth is, anybody who look at the results here for previous Lakeland Hundreds, Neil finishes a couple of hours ahead of me. So, yeah, not much competition, really. I enjoyed it. I hope you do too.
Hollywood heartthrob, python fighter, off-road expert, fitness extraordinaire, and trapeze artist. Only joking. That's another Neil McNichol I found on Instagram when I was doing some stalking ready for this
really?
Podcast. I think he's, Gary's like, he sounds really cool. How many followers has he got? Because we could get him on the podcast.
I'll be Googling him straight after this.
Yeah.
Oh, we have a much better Neil McNichol. He's a fling champion, a Lakeland champion, and now a 20 hours, 3 minutes and 10 seconds Bob Graham round champ. Well, fresh. 2 days? 2 days ago? 3 days ago. Where are we? Yeah.
Yeah, finished
fresh. Fresh. He hasn't even had time to wash his kit. Welcome to the show, Neil. We're delighted to have you on the podcast.
Thanks very much for having me, guys. Great to meet you.
We start as we always do. Where are you? What's the view from your window? And have you been for a run today? Sorry about that last bit.
I'm in a spare bedroom. We've a recent change. We've evicted one child to university, so we've got a spare bedroom now. And this is it.
So I love it. What are you going to do? Have you literally cleared them out and they're going to, you know, it's going to become a chintzy, posh guest room?
Nothing as exciting as that. She's been kicked out of the bigger bedroom. So the smallest child, the little man's gone into the bigger bedroom. And this bedroom is left for her when she returns from uni on her holiday or whatever, or break, if she ever comes back.
I love it. It's still warm. And he's like, I'm getting in there. I've wanted that bedroom for years. Yeah, and
I want the ensuite. The view from the window is through the square, cheap new build window is the back garden and someone else's back garden on an estate in Burnt Island in Fife. Beautiful.
Oh, lovely.
The other window's got a better view of the small Bin Hill, our local hill. run up
oh, not bins. I thought you said of the better view is the small bins. I was going to go,
The Bin Hill. It's called.
The Bin Hill. And I take it you probably haven't been for a run today.
I haven't been for a run today. I drove to the West Coast for 3 hours last night, slept in the van and lay by waiting for an open reach engineer to turn up. Spoke to
me.
Got the broadband in and then drove back here via Glasgow for another 3 or 4 hours. Got home, had my dinner and sat down here.
Here you are. Oh, you're such a champ. Living the dream. Living the dream.
And that's just all the time.
But that sort of job is just the sort of thing you do after like a big race or big challenge when you're like, I can't fit that in when I'm training. Can't give up a whole day to go and do that. So then you just load horrible admin weeks afterwards going, oh, this is terrible. But it sounds like it was successful. So tell us a little bit about where you are in Fife. What's your local trails like? Can you get out the door and up into the hills?
Yeah, so Burnt Island in Fife, it's just across the Forth from Edinburgh, about half an hour on the train, 15 minutes from the Forth Road Bridge. The Fife Coastal Path goes pretty much past my door, just along the coast, all the way from Kincardine to around near Dundee. It's very flat, obviously, on the coast. Well, there's a little bit of ups and downs, so there's a long coastal path there. There's some local hills just nearby, but if I want to go and get better hills, I'll go to the Lomond Hills in sort of middle of Fife, or I'll pop across to the Pentland Hills near Edinburgh to get some, it's pretty quick to get to and get some decent elevation around the Pentland Skyline route and stuff like that. For the longer trips, I'll bomb up to Glencoe area or down to the lakes, which is only a couple, 2.5 hours, 3 hours, which is great.
Yeah, you're sort of in a really good place there, aren't you, to get to anywhere. What does a typical week look for you? Tell us a little bit about maybe like your day job and how you fit in your training around that.
I'm a coach and massage therapist, so I've got the treatment room, a converted garage on the side of the house for the treatment room for massage clients, and I do the coaching online and occasionally one-to-one, but very rarely one-to-one, mostly online and phone calls with clients and writing training plans for them. So yeah, it's pretty flexible, my plan. My wife works full-time in finance, so I generally do the kids' appointments and all that sort of admin and just work, fit my coaching around it and training plans, writing the training plans around that and taking the kids to school or dropping them off or whatever tasks they have, and any other admin basically. And I do the dinners through the week and the wife does them at the weekend. I still do the bins though.
Oh, it's blue job, the bins. How do you fit your running in? Are you sort of high volume athlete, low volume? What does a typical running week look like?
Not that high volume. I normally maybe peak around, if I'm not got some sort of niggle I'm managing, normally about maybe, I tend to start breaking after 80 miles a week. So I normally try to peak around that. So if I can sustain that for a few weeks, then that's a good a good period for me over the recent years with knee problems and knee operations and stuff. I've kind of learned don't try and hit the bigger numbers because everyone else is doing it. Just do what you can actually handle and not fall into pieces on.
Do you mix it up? Is it all running or would you be on the bike or swimming?
I get on the bike sometimes, but generally when I'm injured, I get the bike out and I'll go. But I don't mind biking, but I just don't enjoy it as much as running. It's just feels like you're cheating when you're freewheeling and stuff, you know.
I'd love to have you as my...
It's much better for you, I think.
As my massage therapist, because you'd really get it. You'd be like, oh, that's a bit tight. You'd be like, it's fine.
No, I quite like the bike. It's good for, well, obviously, good recovery. And then I was thinking, as I've got ticked over the 50 age mark, I should maybe be incorporating more bike instead of doing less.
Forget about that, distance. Neil.
Doing less ultra runs and more long recovery bikes after an ultra run, or less back-to-backs and a bike day the next day or something to hopefully continue, to be able to continue running for many years instead of falling to pieces gradually.
That is a good point, actually. That is a good point. It'd be nice to be able to run for many, many years. We could rewind a bit, though, if that's okay. I'd love to know a bit about your journey as a runner. Have you always been trails, or like most of it, I suppose? You know, I was typically did a few 10Ks. Then I thought, oh, my goodness, have I go over a marathon? Yeah, what was your journey as a runner?
Yeah, I started off on roads, I suppose, when I was in the Marines for 7 years or so. Did a lot of endurance stuff then, but nothing really competitive, just daft challenges and just the work you had to do. And then when I left that, I thought, right, I'll try and maintain my fitness, obviously. And I was in London at the time, so I did some 10Ks and half marathons in London and stuff like that. And the standard enter London marathon and be disappointed every year for years and find a marathon outside London to get the good for age time so that I could get into London and tick that box in London, London Marathon 2006. And then did some more sort of road stuff after that. And didn't get into trails really until my first ultra, I suppose, in 2011.
Yeah, which one was your first ultra?
First ultra was the Fling, Island Fling 2011, yeah. Thought, I'd heard about people doing it. And it was after my triathlon phase, actually. And I was realising how crap I was at swimming. And this was, I'm a one-trick pony, running is the way ahead. In this expensive triathlon game and just stick to the running, one foot in front of the other, keep it simple. And so I thought, right, I'll give that a go. Didn't do anything, any particular fancy training, just sort of longer distance, maybe about marathon distance, nothing much more than that. And then gave that a go and did not too bad the first year, but obviously thought, my God, I couldn't run another step, 53 miles, this is impossible. And almost like a nanosecond after you finish the Fling, people ask you, oh, are you going to do the West Island Way? And you're like, what? Yeah. 95 miles? Don't be ridiculous. And then there's a slippy slope towards that.
Mate.
You've surrounded yourself at the Fling with people that think that's just normal as well. Once you enter that world, it's like, you're going to do the West Island Way, aren't you? Good. This is just, come on.
Why stop here?
Yeah, it becomes the normal, doesn't it?
I always fancy the West Highland Way, but for me, not being local, logistically, it seems like quite a nightmare being point to point. And if my memory's right, you need support crew too. You can't just, like, Lake 100 is awesome. It's pretty well supported as far as the event, and it is this circular route. But yeah, I'd love the West Highland Way.
Yeah, I think that's definitely, like, the West Highland Way could definitely be a bigger race. Well, they keep it a small sort of size. They really like to keep it around 300 entries or whatever. But yeah, I think that probably definitely puts a few people off that you need to have two support crew, and you come up and it's the whole weekend sort of thing. You have to, you know, start in Glasgow and go to Fort William and stay the night and then go to the prize game the next day and stuff like that. So it probably puts off a few people, especially people from abroad anyway, and maybe further down south, bringing two people with them. And
The midges put me off. Not the crew, well, not the route.
The midges are a funny one. They're horrific for the crew. And some runners get bothered by them. I don't know about you guys, but if you're moving okay, I know you get sweaty and they stick to you and stuff, but they're not as nearly as horrendous if you're standing still. I remember one time being in the West Island Way. Actually, we were walking it one time when I was in the Marine sort of charity thing, and we thought, oh, we'll get the tents up. It was near Jelly Baby Hill or just before Rannoch Moor, and literally could not get the tents up. We just stopped every second. You're smearing the midges off your face, and you're just like, no one would believe how bad they can be.
I'm yet to witness these midges. I keep hearing about them. They never really materialised at the Dragon's Back race, although we warned they might be there. But yeah, these Scottish midges. But that goblet and that little hoodie that you get, the jacket that you get at the end, though, that's well worth all the midges.
No, it's a good feature. Yeah, I did it in 2015. I've only done the race once, but I've been back every year crewing for people or clients generally most years is a good experience as well. Just van support, throwing gels on, eat something, drink something, get lost.
Slam the door.
Not allowed in the van. No runners in the van till the end.
Actually, we talk about your coaching company, if you want, for a little bit. Run Recover, is that right? And you said you're a massage therapist and a coach. So, yeah, just explain a bit about what it's like being a coach. You know, how many athletes do you coach? Yeah, I'm super curious because I am an uncoached athlete. So, yeah, I'm always
whatever.
Interested.
Every week you run your training plan through me and then you go...
Yeah.
Well, I started up in about 2015, 2016, left the bank and did my massage qualifications. And alongside that, I'd already done sort of basic jog leader course thing to help out at the local running club. So then I went on and did the coaching, running, fitness. And then after that, the Lydiard course, and just sort of coached a couple of people for free initially to get my feet, get experience in it. And then just grew it from then. And people just hear about me or from other clients and picked it up. So I normally have around 20 clients is what I keep it at, really. Yeah, just monthly coaching, writing training plans for them, having to chat with them every month. Yeah, it's just great. It's really interesting. And just different clients all the time, and people drop in and then come back on for other races or seasons and stuff like that. And it's really good, and it works well with the massage as well. So they'll come for massage sometimes, or I've got regular clients who, some non-running clients, mostly runners who come for massage, but yeah, some non-running clients, and they'll have a good chat about running while they're on the massage table, having their calves leisurely touched and massaged gently.
You are, to my massage therapist, she starts asking me questions as she goes into my calves, and I'm like, no, you're going to have to fill this gap now because I can't do both. So, Eddie, tell me about the...
Oh, yeah, you can realise when you're talking away to them and then they stop talking and there's like a deep intake of breath and you think, oh, tender there, are you?
I have a question. Who can take the more pain, men or women? Do you notice a difference?
It's very dependent on the person. Yeah, some people are very sensitive and they're always jumping off the table, and they have this thing quite often where you're putting your forearm into the right calf and their sort of left calf comes up in defense mechanism. You think it's going to come across and get you. So one leg tries to protect the other. It's quite amusing. Body is very defensive.
And my lady, she pins it down.
Yeah, she'd actually get some sort of straps to the table, but maybe that's a different place. Different place to buy a table.
Oh wow, where this conversation going? But are they? Is it like a face to face coaching, or is it remote, or just purely geography? And if you've got an athlete that lives local, you might do a bit more one to one.
Yeah, I've got a client who lives local. I'll meet up with him sometimes, but yeah, mostly it's just a phone call once a month as the plans come, as the blocks come to an end, and a chat. And sometimes it's like this on Zoom, but mostly just a phone call, just to chat. And then quite often if it's nearby or it's convenient or I'm training, I'll try and catch them at a race as well, in the middle of a race or whatever. And so yeah, but mostly online. But most clients are in Scotland, I suppose. I had a few abroad clients and some in England occasionally, but mostly people who know me through the Scottish community and whatever.
Do you have a favourite race that you like to coach athletes for, that they come and you go, oh yeah, this is a good one?
Yeah, that'd be the Lakeland 100 at the moment, I think.
A smooth link onto my next question, which was...
Well, can I ask first, actually, Neil, if you've got any slots left and there's somebody out there who's training for a 50 or 100 or even a Bob Graham round, wow, you know, if you've got any slots available, I'm sure some of our listeners might be hitting
you up. I've got slots available at the moment, and yeah, I'd be glad to take someone on for the Lakeland 100 or the Bob Graham. I've only done the Bob Graham once, obviously, but I did a lot of research into it and obsessed over it I've recced it for years and stuff, but just never got around to it. And just sort of, I kind of thought, right, let's get it cracked, or almost got bullied into it. You should get that done off the list before next year, in case you're injured again, you old idiot.
Love it. Yeah,
I like it because I think you sort of piggybacked off your Lakeland 50 fitness and then gave yourself enough recovery and then went out and did it. I think perfect timing.
There's better times to do it, obviously, and with more daylight hours and stuff like that. But yeah, I was fairly fit for Lakeland 50. I didn't get much fitter afterwards. I was just taking over with the Achilles problems and stuff. But yeah, it was a good time to do it, and just very fortunate with the weather on the night.
Tell us a little bit about your love affair with the Lakeland 50 and 100. You've done them both. What is it that keeps you coming back? And as you said, it's one of your favourite races to probably run and to coach. What is it about the race that you love so much?
I don't know, it's just amazing. Like, it's just the atmosphere and the whole kind of, I've not been to any many festivals, but just it's just that festival vibe when you get there, and the build-up. And the very first year I went, 2016, I think, and I got down there, and they didn't have the marquees in. It was in the school and stuff, but it was the same principle. You know, a big field full of tents and people getting ready and going to the briefing. And just the before, even before the race, when I looked at it and heard about it, and how it was quite, it was very, very competitive and very arduous. You knew about it just from the stats that it was going to be tough. And then before you go down, obviously you do a bit of recceing and stuff, and you're on the route. And like Gary was saying, the principle of the whole is a circuit, and you're coming back to where you started. And it's just a massive loop of the Lake District, taking in loads of the area. And it's just, yeah, it's just a great route, a tough route, but a great route. And the, yeah, the whole vibe starting on the Friday night, going over, over Saturday night into the next day. Yeah, just the whole setup. It's just fantastic.
Well, you've done both, and I know you seem to gravitate towards the 100, but surely as a weekend away, the 50 is the better race. You can enjoy Friday night. You're still going to get a really good run, and you're not absolutely trashed for weeks afterwards.
Yeah, definitely. The 50 was my first time this year. And yeah, that was when I was coming towards it. I was thinking, this is great. You get a full night's sleep. This is fantastic.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
A sociable 11:30 start. This is brilliant. This is almost enjoyable.
I like the checkpoints too. I'm not sure if you're the same, but the checkpoints, unlike many other races, the crew seem to have a real sense of ownership. And there's like a little party vibe with each checkpoint. And they are unique. Every checkpoint has a little theme to it. And I just think that really, when you're feeling down in the dumps and in the trenches, and you just know there's going to be some crazy clown or something at a checkpoint at 2 a.m, it's like, yeah, I can't wait. I can't wait for that.
No, yeah, it's a fantastic feature. And it's one I forget about every year. And then you run along, you come into a checkpoint, it's rock stars, and you go, oh, yeah, I remember reading about that. But I've totally forgotten until I've suddenly run into Freddie Mercury. Handing you some water.
It wasn't actually Freddie Mercury, you know, it's just somebody dressed up. Yeah.
What was it like back in 20? You said about without the marquee. Now, the first year I did it was 2017, and I literally can't remember if there's a marquee or not, but you'll have seen the event grow and grow and grow.
Yeah, I don't think there was a marquee. Maybe there was one marquee, just a small one, and the briefing and stuff was in the school. And well, it's still in the school, but yeah, maybe there's just a one small marquee, and then they changed it the next year and they had the two, and it just got bigger. Really, yeah. And it just seemed to tweak it every year, but it's always a better way. It just gets more efficient, and the whole sort of production line of getting registered and stuff like that. You see a lot of races now, I suppose, and just the way they manage it all, it's just, you can just tell it's a lot of care and attention goes into it. And the same, like you say, with the checkpoints, so they're sort of handed over to running clubs or groups, and they take ownership of it almost and just put tons of effort into it. But no, it's just a great experience the very first year, and you could tell it was well organised and well done, and yeah, that's why I've kind of got addicted to it and kept coming back.
It's a runner's race, that's for sure. The runner's at the centre of everything, isn't it? Yeah. Why did you decide, you just said mentioned earlier that this was the first time you'd done the 50. Most people, once they go into the 100, they don't take the step back because they think, oh, even though the 100 is longer, it's a little bit nicer than the 50 because you don't have to run so fast. What made you decide to have a crack at the 50 this year?
Basically, the experience of the year before, the 100 the year before, I went over my ankle about 3 times before Buttermere, and I was just going ballistic with myself and wasn't quite quitting, but I was thinking, oh, that last one, it was really sore that time. I might have to slow down quite a bit here. This could knock everything out, but it worked okay and I kept going, but I was just absolutely destroyed at the end of the race, and lots of negative self-loathing thoughts in the last four or five hours when I was just getting slower and slower. I was on the amazing nutrition benefits of watermelon for 4 hours because I couldn't eat anything else.
That high calorie, that dense calorie snack.
Oh, yes, elite level stuff.
If memory's right, Ali Bailey took the win, you second, and you were moving well, but I think it must have been James Chapman was probably closing in you, but he just didn't have enough time, I suppose, ultimately.
I came second, about an hour behind Ali Bailey, and so that was a great result, obviously, but I was just absolutely tanked by the time I got to Ambleside. I was just hanging on and knew I was going to get caught, really. Couldn't do anything about it, and ended up, it was less than a minute, I think. I didn't see him coming or anything. When I saw he came in after me, but it was that close, you know, it was mad, like. But yeah, I was totally spent, and it's kind of the opposite to this year, I suppose, when I was moving well at the end and other people were going backwards or whatever, or having a bad day. It's just when it hits you, there's not much you can do about it.
Talk us through your race this year, because it's exciting. It was an exciting race. and a smoking fast finish as well.
Yeah. Well, that's what everybody said to me. The trackers, people get frustrated with the trackers because sometimes they stop and then they jump and they're like, who's doing what? What's happening? And especially when it's all happening in the last 3 miles or whatever. Going into the race, I had a good training block and stuff, and I'd done a lot of volume, more volume than I normally managed to sort of get through niggles and stuff and keep the volume up. So I was actually angling to go back up to the 100 the closer it got to the time, but I left it too late to ask politely, can I have the 100, please? I've changed my mind. I think I could do it again. Sorry, but it's too late.
Sorry, Neil, that's interesting you say that, because I think a lot of people maybe looking in would think race winners would get a kind of special pass. And
if you get on the podium, you do get invited back with a free entry. So
yeah,
it was a free entry as an invite back because you got on the podium and stuff. But I'd taken, when I was asked that, I said, oh, I'll have the 50, please. I was trashed. I'll try the 50 this year. And that was great. And so I'd left after the results based system had kicked in, and stupid, I'd left it too late, which is fair enough. Absolutely fair. And so then I was kind of focused on boring stats and stuff and working out, God, I'm going to have to run about 3 minutes a mile faster in the 50 race. This is insane. I'm too old for this. How am I going to do fast 50 at that speed? And you look at the results and record 7:40 or 7:35 or something, and you're like, my God, it's just going to be so different from the off, you know, just such a different pace. And I couldn't remember the last time I did a 50 mile fast. It would be probably the fling or something in 2017 or 18. So yeah, I was pretty nervous beforehand and sort of overthinking stuff and looking at the stats and previous results of people I knew and whatever, and what I thought I could get. So yeah, it was a lot of overthinking going into it and just worrying about the fast start and stuff like that. So I had my plan for about 8 hours. I was thinking about 8:15 because Rory Harris had got that the year before. And okay, I thought, if I'm on a good day, I might be around him, because he's been in the 100 the same time as me a few times and just beat me or whatever by so many minutes or whatever. So I thought broadly around that. Now, but then I was kind of thinking, but still pretty fast. It's like 7.5 minute miles to the first checkpoint and all this. And I'm thinking, this is...
Oi.
I'm going to sustain that. So in the end, I went with 8 hour splits, thinking I would be roughly, I'd probably end up at 8:10 or something like that. But we'll see how it went. And it went okay for the first checkpoint and the second checkpoint. And then I didn't really look at the splits after that. Just felt okay and sort of ran on feel. And so it went pretty good. My nutrition worked well. I was imagined to get, I didn't bother going to any checkpoints. I was just on the PH 1500 tabs with the SIS chew. So I was trying to aim for like 70 to 90 grams of carbs an hour or something like that. But not eating anything from the checkpoints, just getting water from them and using the powder drink, well, this other Basica powder drink that I use, which just gives me 50 grams of carbs. So I was just necking them.
Basica? What? Sorry, Neil, what is
Basica sports drink. The 24-hour world champion geezer who's done like nearly 200 miles. He used it. Well, I heard of him.
Surikov, is that right?
Yeah, something like that.
Wow.
Surikov,
yeah.
Yeah, he used to use it, I think. And it's just this drink you get from Germany or somewhere. And it's mostly sugar, obviously, but loads of minerals in it as well. And it's quite good, quite a subtle flavour. Yeah, as I was telling Young Hearts, Young Free Guys, when you Google it, it comes up in one of the websites as a women's hair loss product.
And you're, just like you come up as a Python tamer.
Yeah. It's all lies.
I'm going to have to get some of that. Anything to do with hair loss would be awesome.
I know, but side benefits of it. Yeah. So I had that, and yeah, it was just 50 grams of that in a bottle. So I was drinking a bottle of that, and I'd have my chew every hour, and hopefully that would do me fine, which worked well till well after Ambleside.
Oh,
so,
yeah, amazing.
The main reason the race went well for me was, I think, was the nutrition worked well for me this year compared to different years, or generally I'm pretty struggling to eat well into a race and have to force it down me. And so yeah, I got to the first checkpoint bang on time, and I was in, I don't know, fourth place or something like that. A couple of guys had gone ahead. Rory was coming out as I was going in, followed him up Fewsdale and sort of caught him up at the top of Fewsdale and going down to Mardale, followed him along Mardale, and we were ticking over nicely. And then sort of just felt like maybe I could go a little bit quicker, so I passed Rory, thinking that was probably a mistake and I'll see him again later on. Got into Mardale, checked the clock in Mardale, I was bang on schedule. Left Mardale, went up Gatescarth, feeling okay, and then the rain started. And that's the funny thing about the, well, not funny, it's the obvious thing with the 50, you're just getting a positive boost every time you pass a 100 runner shuffling up a hill, because they've got 70 miles in their legs or whatever it is, and you're going, I'm on fire!
I'm crushing you!
You're that guy. You're that guy, Neil.
It's just a positive boost. But yeah, and then a couple of guys passed me, Dan Thacker passed me, Kentmere, before Kentmere, and another chap, Paul Trigwell, or whatever his name was, and they were going a wee bit quicker, and I was kind of almost hanging on to him, but just thought it was a wee bit too quick, so I backed off a little bit just to hopefully sustain the pace I could. Got into Ambleside, not too bad, and just cracked on from there. I was thinking I was in third or fourth, and I was thinking the old 50-year-old prize, that'll be okay. I'll not, maybe not get the podium, but I'll get the 50-year-old Duffer's prize. That'll be good. That'll look good on Insta.
And revolve my year around this Duffer prize. So if I rewind a bit, I'm curious, you said about checking your time at Mardale and Halltown. In between that though, are you mindful of your pace, or you not really pay much attention to your splits until each checkpoint?
I've just got a wee crib sheet, and it's just got the time of the time at Halltown and the time at Mardale and the time at the next one. It's not got the pace I need to average over between each one. It's just it's just the time, and I'm sort of, well, I suppose I'm on feel in between the checkpoints. But yeah, generally it works out okay for me, unless something's going wrong or whatever, or I've been too ambitious, or there's a hell of a headwind or something like that. So yeah, not obsessed in between the checkpoints. Just I'll take a wee glance at the watch now and again and think, yeah, feels okay. But generally, it's always overruled by, well, I can't go any faster than this. If I go faster than this, it won't, I'm not going to be able to sustain it. It might look good for 10 minutes, but then I'll just look like a fanny.
True.
Dying.
You said when you left Ambleside you didn't know you were in the lead. When did you know you were in the lead?
I didn't take the lead till the last mile, the mile and a half or whatever it was.
Talk us through that moment.
So out of Ambleside, Dan Thacker passed me again. So I was like, what happened there? And he said, I was being sick in Ambleside and stuff, so I had to sort myself out of the toilet. He actually said, I'm a bit of a princess. I can't be sick in front of other people. I had to go to the toilet. He was laughing about that as he ran off ahead of me. And I thought again, yeah, he's too quick for me. I can't hang on to him, so I'll just do my best. So I didn't see him again. And then I was feeling good. Went through Chapel Style, and they said to the lady outside, oh, do I need to go in through this checkpoint? Can I just, you know, they'll detect I'm here magically through the proximity thing. And she said, no, you need to go through. You can go straight through, though. So I went straight through. And the wife saw that on the screen that they have sharing it. So that was quite amusing. I just went straight through the middle. Saved a wee bit of time, I suppose, up to the unmanned Dibber. I could see Dan running down when I was coming across to get to the unmanned Dibber. But he was going at a fair pace, which is obviously because he's going downhill and I was going uphill. So I suppose I got confused about thinking there's no chance of catching him, but then I realised he's bombing downhill and I'm going uphill.
Yeah.
And I hoped to see him when I got to the last checkpoint at Tilberthwaite. But I was looking ahead and I couldn't see him. There was a few people at the checkpoint, but I couldn't actually see a runner. So I thought, oh God, he's got quite far ahead. I thought it was in third or fourth perhaps. So I was thinking, oh, that's it, I'm not going to make the podium, I'll be first 50. Got into the checkpoint, ditched a couple of, asked them to get these chews out of my back of my vest. And they were taking them out and they're starting to open those. And I don't want them, just ditch them. That's 70 grams of weight. Don't need that. Got clutching at straws by this point. And then went to run off and then fumbled for the pound coin at the bottom of the stairs, wasted about 20 seconds trying to get my fingers in to get the pound coin out for the charity. And then I went up the hill and pushed on up the hill. And I was thinking, I was still sort of thinking, they'll be gone. I can't catch them. I'll try and best go up this hill. And then got up around the hill and I could see them, the last slope towards the final descent. And they were both walking.
I love it when people are walking and you're trying to catch them and you think.
Well, that was the magic trick. That's what just pulled me in, because they were walking. I was thinking they probably should be running on that slope. It's not that steep. And the first chap at his poles out and he's powering along and Dan was a few hundred metres behind him and he was walking. And I was thinking, oh, maybe I've just smelled
blood.
Chance.
I love it.
Awesome. So I pushed on a bit more, found some energy, because it's just mad. Like I was saying to myself, this shows how mentally weak I am, or people are. You just, that the effect of seeing someone just, oh, you thought you were tired, you're not so tired now, are you? Just faking it.
I was going to ask you at this point, does your marine training kick in? Do you become that, like, come on, get this done?
It's just the magnet effect. But I suppose you just do a quick calculation, don't you? Think, oh, they're walking, oh, maybe I can find something else, maybe, no, there is a chance. And you just, I suppose it's just what the information you've been given. You think there's this much gap. I think I've got a chance here, so I better make an effort and go for it. And then I looked up again and Dan was in the brackens pulling his shorts up.
Oh, poor Dan. And if he didn't Aye. Like puking in public, he's certainly not going to like the other excavation.
So I wonder if he listens to the podcast. You've just outed him for a while.
I think he was telling a few people. And
classic.
So I saw him. He came out of the brackens and he was standing there when I went up. And he was like, oh, I'm absolutely burst, man. I'm done. You might catch the first guy. He's just up there. And I was like, right, get cheers. And then he shouted after me, who's in fourth? And I was thinking, well, you're in fourth because I've just passed you. You're fourth now. But confused me anyway. So I was thinking, what, mine's second? Is this first in front of me? But I was in a bit of a brain fog by that point. All I wanted to do was catch the guy.
Of course, you've ditched all your gels and now you need the energy and you're like, I've got nothing.
I did calculations now. Don't know where I am.
Yeah.
Just looking past people. And so then I was stressing about passing Mr. Trigwell, who's in front. I didn't know at the time, but so he starts the descent and I was thinking he's probably saving himself for a final sprint or whatever, just voice of doom to myself as well, worst case scenario, anything else is a bonus, and how am I going to pass him? And then at that moment he sort of went round to the right of this kind of rocky outcrop and I dived down the left and just kind of ended myself down that horrific descent, hopefully not going to fall over my face, and then down the road to the end, crossed the finish line, made a complete idiot of myself, not knowing what position I was in or whatever.
How fast was your last mile?
Well, it's all downhill, so fast. 6.5 or 7 minute mile, something or whatever.
Awesome. If anybody's listening to this, Lakeland 50 and Lakeland 100, it is literally not over until the copper mines, you know, or until you cross the line. What a race. But Andy Berry, I think Jarlath was on a rock.
That was amazing.
As you cross the cattle grid, as you kind of coming into Coniston, you would have heard the kind of cowbells. As,
in the town, yeah, you can hear. That's when the runners come into the village, they get that, and you can hear who's ahead or whatever. Yeah, no, it's great. But it's such a, you're just trashing yourself going down that tarmac road into the town, the village. It's just horrendous sometimes, the fatigue that you get, and it's just, you can't do anything about it in those last minutes or the last couple of miles, and you're just worried you're getting caught, or the other way around, and it's just great. You're seeing people ahead of you, you're feeding off their fatigue.
And so you crossed the line and you weren't 100% sure that you'd won. Was that correct?
No, I didn't have a clue at one. I thought, yeah, I've got the first 50-year-old prize. That's brilliant, surely. And because I was saying to someone else, you just cross the line. There's no like banner for the finisher, the first finisher.
That's right, yeah.
They're not waiting there for the first lady or the first man or the first whatever. They said first 50. And I was like, yeah, first 50-year-old. How many other guys in the front? And they're like, first 50. I'm like, yeah, I'm 50.
All right. Cause look, I just won 50.
And they explained, no, you're in the 50-mile race. You've won. And I was like, oh, wow, it's really good.
Wow, this is awesome. Well done. Amazing. Well done.
And then you get marched into the tent, do you, which is the best feeling ever when you've won, obviously. You're like, this is great. They'll do a little dance, start working out what little dance you're going to do in front of the crowd, the captive audience you've got for a few minutes.
Yeah, it's pretty wild, actually.
Do you want to show us the little dance that you do?
Oh, yeah, it can only be done live.
It's on Instagram. It's on Facebook. But it's pretty wild when you finish the race. You've done the 50, Eddie, so you know that you've got the little barrier with all your friends and family there just waiting for you as you come in. It's pretty wild. Not as wild as the people who come last on the 100 who come in to the actual ceremony that Mark's doing on the Sunday morning. That is absolutely...
That was a tearjerker, that was, wasn't it?
Oh, my goodness me, goodness me. Well, you're super greedy, Neil. Not only smashed the Lakeland 50, you've gone and done a Bob Graham round too in 20 hours, 3 minutes and 10 seconds. Do you ever look at that and think, I wish that was a 19 instead of a 20? Or you're satisfied with the 20?
Yeah, I definitely thought that as soon as I finished. I was thinking, bloody 3 minutes. But then I remembered stupid nav mistakes and time spent in checkpoints and thought, yeah, there's no point caring about it afterwards. You need to care about it during, you fanny.
I'd like Neil just in my head. I love this chat that goes on.
Do you not get those voices as well? Is it just me?
Absolutely, but I just like it more with the Scottish accent. And yeah, Fanny, stop fanny around that chat.
I've not used Fanny as part of my repertoire.
Hashtag so, Fanny.
Hashtag Fanny. Oh, wow, trending. So yeah, talk us about the Bob Graham round then. I suppose you said earlier you got bullied, but there must have been more to it than that. Why the Bob for you?
Yeah, it's been in my mind for years, but only just, it's a great route and we do a recce of sections every now and again with my friend and me up in the lakes. It's just a great route and stuff for them. It's always been, we just talked about it, but we've only talked about it over beer after running and stuff and never really planned it out and stuff. Johnny Kilpatrick was doing it this year and I helped him do it and that sort of made me think this is an awesome experience, the whole, you know, getting together to do it and help someone around it. And then he was encouraging me to get it cracked this year For selfish reasons, I think he obviously owed me a favour because I helped him. So I think he wanted to get that off his list quickly. So just get it cracked this year, Neil, and I can move on. Awesome. And then I also thought, you know, there's also races and stuff. So over the, with recent knee problems and stuff, I've struggled to make the Lakeland start line. I'm worried about being there to, for this, being fit enough for the start. So I've kind of reserved a lot of time before and after Lakeland to make sure I can make it. So you kind of lose confidence from big races and stuff if you've got another one in the distance or near distance. So you want to save yourself for that. I suppose I put it off for that. And then, yeah, I just thought, well, I'm fairly fit after the 50. Maybe it is a good idea. It's not the best time of year to do it, but might as well just give it a shot instead of waiting until May next year. You never know. Might be in some sort of niggle or something that will stop me from doing it in May or June next year at the right time.
You were brave though. October, that is a pretty random month to be up on the High Fells, but it was a bit it was raining, but nothing, didn't seem too bad that weekend. Is that correct?
No, just so lucky. Well, yeah, leading up to it, you could see that the storm was coming on Wednesday or whatever it was.
Yeah.
The first named storm, and I was thinking this is going to be a disaster. But then it was starting to talk about there's a slight weather window in the Friday night and Saturday morning. Maybe the rain will come back in Saturday afternoon, and that's exactly what happened. And it really had to be in the, I had it down for Friday or Saturday night, but we'd only booked two nights in the campsite for everyone. And if it was going to be on Saturday night, it was just going to be a massive pain in the arse logistics-wise for getting back up the road on Sunday for everybody, you know. It needed to have been absolutely horrific for us not to go on the Friday night. But yeah, I was kind of dreading, you know, just that, you know, it can be horrific and just running in the chucking down rain and wind is just not enjoyable for on that course as well for that length of time. It was just perfect. I knew it was going to be a full moon, but you don't know what the cloud cover's going to be like. So the full moon was coming and going. It was pretty windy on top of Skiddo, a bit of clag, torch was bouncing off the fog and stuff, but okay, like still fairly mild. Like I was in a long sleeve top, I didn't have to get the jacket out till leg four.
I saw you set off with a backpack. That's quite unusual for a bob. Normally other people carry all your bits and bobs. Was that just because you didn't have as many support runners as you'd hoped?
Yeah, well, I just had one for each leg, and yeah, I didn't want them to have to carry everything. So just all I had was I just had the waterproof jacket and bottoms in my pack, and I carried one bottle and asked the other guys to carry two for me or whatever. And I would top up where I needed to, so it worked out okay. That I could have gone lighter, I suppose.
That was a right day there. I didn't carry anything.
That's I thought afterwards that, yeah, if you really wanted to go for it, you would have two people and just the bare minimum and smash it, peeled grapes at every checkpoint, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. Oh, did you not have, you did it without peeled grapes. That's incredible.
It was a tough night. No watermelon Garrett. Either.
No watermelon,
oh,
no.
Oh, my God.
I did make some, have a chef moment before leading up to, I thought I'll make some sort of sweet potato thing that I quite like, so I made it. Found some recipe for sweet potato mash and banana.
Oh.
And chucked some avocado on top of it and made it in little takeaway boxes. Had that in the van fridge. But I didn't test
good?
It before. I didn't test it beforehand. And so I made it the day before. It worked out okay, yeah. It quite nicely at Dunmail Rise and a bit at Lasdale.
Did you have a schedule? They've got an awesome, you probably used it actually, being a bit of a stats man, the Bob Graham Round Planner. Is it Bob Waitman, I think it is.
Bob Waitman.
And did you have a, you're smoking fast time, but was that roughly the time you were aiming for?
Like someone told me a few years ago, your Lakeland times will show that you'll do a Bob Graham no boiler under 20 hours. Like, and I was thinking, you sure? And I'm like, oh yeah. Lakeland time of 22 hours, no boiler. You'll smash the Bob Graham like on paper. So I thought, right, maybe we'll just try for under 20. So we'll aim for 19 and a half and try and get under 20. So yeah, I've stuck in 19 and a half into the calculator, and it gave me a 19 hours 35 schedule or whatever, which wasn't too bad. When I'd helped Johnny, it was just a few minutes quicker up to Skiddo, it was just a few minutes ahead of him in each leg and stuff like that. And we'd done some recces that were far too fast and stuff, and quickly realised, right, we won't have to run this fast on the night and stuff.
Yeah.
I think I did one a few weeks back on leg two with my friend, and we got to the top of Coughhead like 10 minutes ahead of the schedule. We'd both been in the woods for a 10 minute poo already. Oh. We're like 20 minutes ahead. Too much information.
That schedule, the planner though, it's amazing how accurate it is. The years and years of data that he's got to collect that.
It's a great asset. Yeah, really, it was really helpful.
I had that
and laminated it. And I bought a laminator a few weeks ago. It's the best thing ever. You got to buy a laminator. It's just brilliant.
I can't believe being a marine guy, you haven't got one already.
Yeah. No, shocking, really.
My husband laminates everything. You never know when things could get damp and you need to be able to read the shopping list. It's always fully laminated.
Oh, it's great. So I've fanned a bit with that in the days leading up to it and made a little... So I made schedules for the support van and stuff, and then I made a couple of ones out for each. So I had one in my pocket for each leg and got that, went to the van, handed the one I'd done, got the one I needed, and the sport runner had one as well. And we lapped the watch on every summit, spent ages getting the trace up, ripped off Finlay Wells' trace, and then slightly adjusted it for myself, and then added all the waypoints of all the tops, so then I could get it on the watch and it'd tell you how far to the next waypoint and all that sort of stuff. It was quite cool.
Wow.
It took ages to do it. Like, it doesn't make you run any faster, obviously, but it's cool to have.
I think it's a good tip for people doing a bob. Turn off the automatic lap and then just lap it manually on each summit.
Yeah.
We mentioned you supported a bob. You've got support crew. Traditional with a bob, you know, people help you. You help them. Are you now in Bob Graham debt and people have got you penciled in to help on their rounds?
Yeah, well, I'm going to be starting bullying people now for next year to get my favour out of the way. So yeah, definitely said to a couple of people, well, you're finished, crossed the finish line, when you're it now.
Yeah, you're like, I've got one more year left in this knee, so if you want me, I'm leg one, this is the date.
Give me plenty of advance warning. But no, it was a great experience, and so one support runner for each leg, and Johnny Kilpatrick on leg one, and we finished that on time, that was good, and Rory Harris on leg two, who's obviously the Lakeland 100, Rory Harris.
Yeah.
And he knew leg two. So he literally just drove up to help, did the leg and drove back home in a winner.
A few times obviously crewed it, supported at Threlkeld, and you'd rock up there at 2:30 in the morning and then you just go and run for 15 miles and then someone will give you a lift back to Keswick. It's like, wow, it's just magic. Absolutely love it. On paper, you know, 20 hours seems like it's smoking fast. Didn't seem like there's any problems. But yeah, were there any highs and lows?
Yeah, it was definitely a low. I can't really describe why, though. I wasn't sure how. It was. Just felt very fatigued. My legs felt really heavy. It wasn't super energy bonk in leg three. Leg one and two were broadly on schedule. One brief nav mistake on leg one. Leg two was okay, really. And then, came into, started leg three and just, like, I don't know, but it didn't get light till above Langdale. Don't know, I was just feeling really heavy-legged above Langdale and then getting up Bow Fell and all that. And just when you start hitting all the boulders and stuff like that, and then I made a really stupid navigation mistake at Mickledore. I went down too early for Lord's Rake. And
okay.
had to traverse across to Lord's Rake. Luckily, we didn't have to go back up and across. We managed to get across to it and go up there. So wasted about 10 minutes there. But I was losing time on every top, like a couple of minutes or a minute behind each lap I was supposed to be hitting. But yeah, I just felt really heavy legged, and I was trying to get my gels down me and my SIS chews and stuff and drinking enough, but just really heavy legs. So I was coming to the conclusion I just picked too fast a schedule.
What you needed was some sweet potato, bananas and avocado at Wasdale.
If only you'd had that in the van, that would have sorted him out.
Wasdale, and got the Moolah rice out, that helped a bit, and sort of recovered after that.
Classy. Yeah, after you came off Scarfell, did you go down the Scree? That is awesome. What a ride that is.
Yeah, I went down the Scree. There was a couple of walkers and stuff standing in the Scree looking at me kind of funny, and then had a bit of an audience at the bottom of the hill. They were coming through the gate and they were looking up, and I was kind of zigzagging down the grass fairly quick, and then they probably thought I did it deliberately, but I fell on my arse and sort of skated down for like 50 metres like this. Like Tom Cruise on a rooftop or something, I thought in my mind. And then just went straight through the river.
That's what they were thinking, definitely.
Probably. I went straight through the river and through the gate, and they were just looking at me thinking, we're going to walk up here. What are these lunatics doing running down here?
They were thinking, funny, what a funny.
Possibly, yeah.
You made a joke, Gary.
It's only taken 10 months. Did you have a favourite leg?
I think leg four. Leg four. Oh, I was feeling good on, like, when I got up off U-Barrow, and leg four was the one I supported for Johnny. And it's just once you're up and out, you're starting to think, we're getting there.
And it's such an awesome place. The terrain, it's quite wild and rugged, leg four. I love it, actually.
Yeah, and it's a good runnable descent off Pillar down to the Lakeland crossing, the Black Seal Pass and that, and then way up and on to Kirk Fell and cracking on with it. Yeah, it's quite a good leg.
Talking about the Lakeland 100, you do Blacksail Path, and that's quite, for Lakeland 100, you've got Blacksail Pass and probably, oh my goodness, Fewsdale, the big climbs. But then you think in the context of the Bob, that is a pass, and you've got a lot more climbing.
Well, it is just the insane elevation. I was joking with someone, like, it's so funny how when you link all the legs together, it's so much harder than just doing one or two. Who would have thought
that?
It is. But yeah. It's the elevation just, well, and the terrain, I suppose. Like, I was only ticking over at 6,000 or 7,000 feet a week after Lakeland 50 around here on easy terrain and stuff, and it's just, you just can't replicate the pounding on the boulders and all that sort of stuff that you get, yeah, and the high knees lifting up and stuff. It takes out you so much more than sort of runnable grassy terrain with the same elevation.
Even some of the flat areas is quite frustrating, because if you just take your eye off the ball for a second, you'll be flat on your face. I've not taught you the timing. Are you too late to get the invite for this year's Bob Graham dinner? Will that be a 2024 event?
I sent the form in yesterday and got a reply like 20 minutes later, and he was like, oh yeah, well, welcome to the club, blah, blah, blah. And oh yeah, we've already booked the dinner and stuff, but you know, you can contact this person or whatever. I wasn't sure. I thought I'd read it. They don't do that, or maybe they started out if they get enough people attending or whatever.
Yeah, oh my goodness, was it 2022, my Bob. Yeah, they were doing the dinner then, so well worth going. I would definitely go. It's such a blast.
Did you?
Yeah, they had, oh my goodness, they had Nikki Spinks did a talk. Beth Pascal was there. Yeah, it was a who's who of fell and trail.
Gary Thwaites, he was there.
That's what they were saying, bet you. What a fanny. What a fanny.
Oh, that's amazing. Well done.
Yeah, super well done for amazing Bob Graham, and also for 2 days late for sorting out that broadband issue, and now being on the podcast all within like 24 hours. That's amazing. Wow. What is next? Are you done now, 2023? The racing book signed off, or is there anything else in the calendar for this year?
I entered a road half marathon, kind of hilly road half marathon at the end of October. I should be all right to do that, but it's just for some interest to do at the end of October. But I've got to go to Lanzarote on Friday for a week's holiday. It's such a struggle.
Going
to La Santa Sports Resort as well. It's going to be such a nightmare, a bit of running, swimming and cycling. So I'll have to drag myself through that and then see how the running legs are going.
We're here for you.
I mean, if you just...
at Lanzarote. I've never been, but I've seen amazing pictures of the food buffet, basically.
Yeah. I'd love to do it. It looks awesome. Club La Santa. Yeah, a lot of friends go and do that.
Can you not get them as a Patreon partner, Gary? Signed them up.
Imagine that. I've got a favour to ask you, Neil, though. You need to win the Lakeland 100 outright, because if my memory is correct, if you win it outright, then you don't also win the V50 prize. So that,
yeah, I'll do my best.
I might be able to pick up the scraps.
Well, you can do it for me.
Oh, that's a deal.
Yeah.
Are you doing the 100 or the 50?
I'm in the 100 again, yeah.
Oh, bitter rivals again. Two fannies racing against each other. Fanny World Cup.
Is that the A goal? Oh, God, you two. Is that the A goal for next year, the Lakeland 100?
To try and get the podium. It'd need to be a bad day for quite a few people before I hit the very top spot of the 100. Good day to make the podium. It's a tough race. And, well, you saw this year, the times were insane for the top three. I can't remember what the time the third guy was, but it was a lot faster than I'd be, I think.
Do you still think your best race is on that course? Do you still think you can go faster?
It's the usual case. There's a lot of variables, isn't it? If everything hits correct, you know, you can get a lot out of yourself. But yeah, it's the nutrition, I suppose, in the 100. It's a key element, and it's very difficult for it all to go well and have the mindset or just to force food down you when you're not feeling like it or things have gone wrong. But I don't know. There's a definite level above me, another level above me that it's too, probably, I don't think I can. I'm trying to think of my fastest time, 21:37 or 21:40 or something like that. So if I got under 20 hours, it would be a bit of a miracle, I think. And these days you need to be hitting the low 20s, I think, to be winning.
Do you think your Bob has taught you anything, or you're going to take anything from your Bob Graham into the Lakeland 100?
Well, yeah, I was lacking strength training, I think, in the bob. That showed up, I think. I used to do a lot of squat and stuff and deadlift and things, and I was quite regular at it and kind of missed a bit of that this year. So I was kind of protecting my knees and stuff and the Achilles, so I didn't do quite as much as that. And I think I was definitely missed that in the hard restrictions of the bob. I think I was lacking that, so I need to try and get back into that, I think, over winter regular.
I wouldn't do any of that, Neil. Just wing it.
Good idea.
That'll be awesome. My goodness me, for me to get anywhere near you, I've got to be on some kind of EPO or something, or you've got to have a horrendous day.
Basica and chews.
Oh, yeah. Basica. I'm not the hair will be like that. I'll be like a Viking. <That'd> be Excellent.
You were just above 24 this year, were you? You want to go under 24? Yeah.
That's my goal. You know, I'm not going to get wrapped up in anything else, he says, sandbagging already. But that is my goal, to be sub 24. I've tried for that since 2017, sorry. So that is my one and only goal. Awesome. If you take the win, then I could prosper. Potentially, you never know. My goodness me, we're saying this as if it's a given. Somebody else could be just turning 50 pretty soon. And then,
you just never know on the day what happens to people on the day. It's mental, what you think, you know, top people, and they just, everybody can have a bad moment and crumble or whatever, and totally energy drop and you can pass them over. Or the other way around.
It's a long race. But yeah, best of luck. All funny and aside, I truly think I just can't wait for July again. It's my favorite race of the year. We see with the podcast, it's just a kind of coming together, the community. It's just wonderful. So I can't wait. As long as it's sunny, I don't want a rain and miserable weekend in Coniston.
Yeah, you want that evening sunshine when you're sweating, going out of Coniston, thinking, oh my God, here we go again. Yeah. Too fast at checkpoint one. Box.
Okay, we've got quick five questions. Do you have a favourite part of the lakes?
Over towards Buttermere and Buttermere to Braithwaite. I quite like that sort of area. We did a run last summer, ended up away above, I can't remember the names of the tops, past Buttermere, like you continue on up above Buttermere and above Braithwaite, and that was quite cool. Quite like that area, but I just love going down in the van and parking up wherever we're parking and just running around. So staying near Keswick, we're staying in Castlerigg this weekend. It's just a fantastic campsite there. And just bombing around and going to these places, or stayed up in a lay-by and up near Honister Mine and stuff, and did some of the recces there, run from Honister down to Wasdale and go round leg four and come back up and stuff. It's just really cool. Really rugged and just great views and stuff. Just a fantastic area.
I love it. I see some of the vans parked up when I've been out for a run. I just think, oh, imagine that, waking up to that view with your cup of coffee or something in the morning. That would be magic. Next question. What subject do you wish you had worked harder at school?
Well, I don't know if I worked harder, but PE at school, it didn't seem that great. Like, it wasn't that, I don't know, there was a bit of rugby and football and stuff. I don't remember being particularly enthused by, you know, or inspired by people to do different things at PE in school. And there was a wee bit of cross country occasionally, but it just seemed that we kept jumping from thing to thing. Yeah. And I remember one thing, actually, we were brought up on a farm, so we lived about a mile and three quarter off the main road. And I used to cycle out to the road to get this old minibus to the next town, to get the bus to the big town. And all this carry on. So I was quite fit cycling at the time. And we had one time doing this. It was on an exercise bike, and they'd keep increasing the resistance or something like that. And I did quite well on it. And the guy was like, oh, that's amazing, like, compared to other guys and stuff. But probably nowadays they wouldn't say it in front of the whole class, but made everyone else feel like a bunch of idiots, because, look at this, Neil can do this. And I'm like, well, I'm cycling every day. And they're like, oh, and everybody's getting miserable, like, because I could get the same resistance. Like, but that was the only sort of interesting memory I remember about it. And a bleep test once as well. But then with the bleep tests and the Marines and stuff after that, and they were not very nice.
No.
My kids have just discovered the bleep test at school, and because they came back and they were like, this thing, and it kept bleeping. We kept on a run. I was like, oh, yeah, I've done that. And they're like, no, not in your day, Mum. How do they do that?
Yeah, that bleeps back then.
Yeah. So they had to wind the tape with a pencil. It's a great, and they still do it.
I remember doing it in a gym in London once actually, and got just ridiculously competitive. I was obsessed with trying to beat the squash coach at the time. Managed to beat him, and I was just, this is the best thing ever.
Hello.
Tiny studio going back and forth like maniacs.
Okay, next question. Oh, we've got two. Which one should I go for, Eddie?
You could choose. The second one, I think.
Okay, I'll go for the second one. If you could switch lives with any fictional character, who would it be and why? This is super tough. This
Jack Reacher, baby.
Of course. I mean, it's so close to your everyday life anyway. There wouldn't be that much change.
He's not a fanny.
Imagine that on the strap line, the tagline of the movie. Jack Reacher. He's not a fanny.
But he's always getting into such terrible problems. And you're like, come on, Jack. We all saw this coming.
Just walks into town in trouble.
Walks into town and makes such a mess. I'm always like, who's going to clear this all up? Who is going to clear this all up, Jack?
Oh, it's great. It was just so funny in these books. Like, what's the tagline? It's like, men want to be him, women want to be with him.
Really? I wouldn't say no.
How could you?
I don't think I'd say no either, actually. Would you rather sleep in late or take a long nap midday?
Sleep in later, take a long nap midday. I'm starting to think more about having naps in the day actually as a good recovery thing.
I love but naps.
Can't seem to find the time. I'm thinking that'd be a good idea. Maybe that's a thing in your 50s, you start thinking about naps and stuff.
I'd love a nap.
I love a nap. Oh my God, a nap is so good.
Do you feel good afterwards or do you feel groggy afterwards?
I am a professional napper. I pretty much have one most days. I have my lunch.
Awesome.
Yeah, and then I set my alarm for like 15 minutes and I can do it anywhere. I can sit in a chair and I'll just shut my eyes and I will wake up when my alarm goes off, get up, get going. It's probably my superpower. Sadly.
I used to be jealous of a guy when we were in the Marines. It was a guy who had been in the submarine service and then he joined the Marines and we were in these bunkers above Faz Lane waiting to be attacked by the Russians. It never happened. So you're just sitting around watching TV all day waiting for things to happen and people would go for a nap in the afternoon and he'd literally just lie down and be out for like 3 hours just like that. He'd go to sleep anywhere in seconds because he's so used to the 6 on, 3 off in the submarine for like 4 months or something insane.
Oh,
like,
yeah, of course.
How can he sleep like anywhere?
Yes.
I'm so jealous. I don't even know him. I'm really jealous.
He sounds great.
Okay. Eddie's going to mock me for the way I deliver this question. Every week we share the podcast on Instagram. Every week, Neil, we share the podcast on Instagram and we'll pop a song with our Instagram story and post. But you get the choice, Neil. What song would you like us to use for your Instagram story?
I was thinking one occasionally I ask Alexa to play is Chasing Rainbows, Shed 7.
Shed 7. Oh, that is
it's a new one to us, that one.
That's a good song.
Good song.
That's a good song, Shed 7. Have you ever seen them live?
Yeah, no, no.
I saw NSYNC were coming back on tour. Are they the same?
Exactly the same.
Same genre.
They're probably about the same age, to be honest. Cool. What a song. What a song to finish on. Brilliant.
What a song. What a guy. Neil, thank you so much for giving up your time. Precious time. Recovery time after the Bob Graham. Sharing the delights of Lakeland. And keep listening to the podcast because no doubt your name is going to be mentioned pretty much every episode as Gary gets your picture up in the gym.
Chucking darts
at it. When Jack Reacher on my
I'll be tying your shoelaces together in Coniston on the start line.
Keep us posted on how you're doing and maybe we'll have some SmackDown talk a couple of weeks before Lakeland 100 next year.
Awesome. No, thanks for having me. It's great.
Take care. Thanks, Neil.
Cheers. Thanks, Neil.
Bye.
There was a bit of brotherly love going on in that interview, wasn't there, you two?
It was good. I loved it. Such a treat.
Such a treat till he's smashing you at the next race.
Well, you know, I'm so laser focused on Neil. To be fair, like I said earlier, he is going to be a couple of hours. If all goes to plan for everybody, even if my goal is sub 24 hours, he's roughly 21, 22 hours. So he's still a couple of hours ahead of me. I'm not even thinking about anybody else. There could be another 49-year-old who just tips into that age bracket. My
Ideal scenario is I'd win the Lakeland 100, but that's never going to happen. But plan B is Neil wins the Lakeland 100, and then by default, the V50 prize rolls down to...
By default, anything you win by default, we're not celebrating on this podcast.
I'll take it. I will take it. But yeah, I am totally not paying attention to other potential entrants. And yeah, there'll be a lot of speedy 49-year-olds who might turn 50 before July. Tales from the Trails. First thing we always do is head over to our Strava Club, and David Hannah, 118.2 miles. Fortunately, David's got a private Strava. I'd be super curious to see what David's been up to, because he also topped the charts for time on feet too. 25 hours, 7 minutes and 34 seconds. I'm racking my brains for an event that might tip you over the kind of 100-mile distance. I don't know what has been going on over the weekend. But yeah, apologies, David, we can't share what you've been up to. But yeah, well done all the same. Dave Bales, 18,497 feet of elevation. David's always crushing it. I'm friends with David on Facebook, so I always see what he's up to. And I don't know if anybody remembers, first time I ever met Dave Bales was in the Finnish church in London before the London Marathon.
Oh, he's that guy. He's that guy.
Yeah. And he's training for the spine. So how many weeks? Is it 10, 11 weeks? The clock
maybe
is
less
ticking
now.
To...
Maybe 9. Tick, 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 tick.
Yeah, well done, Dave. And good luck.
This week's Tales from the Trails is from Graham Tyerman. Good morning, Eddie and Gary. I hope you're both well. I thought I'd drop you this tale from the trails to show just what people can achieve. Whilst I've been into running for a lot of years and have been supported by my wife, Jill, for the past 32 years, she, by her own admission, would not class herself as a runner until now. However, this year she's had an amazing transformation. I entered UTMB Nice 50K, never again, no water at first aid station and long queues, but that's another story, and noticed a shorter distance race, the 15K, which looked doable, so I signed Jill up for the race. Initially pleased with this, she was then horrified to learn that the 15K was actually 22K and totally out of her comfort zone. During the period of signing up and during the race, she had joined the Orchard Eagles Running Club and has lost over 2.5 stone. Wow, looks great to it. Great on it. Back to the race. Having finished my race in the early hours of Sunday morning, Jill's race was due to start a few hours later. I informed her that when she gets to the port, there is still about 4K to go. So don't think it is over until it's over, but it is a flat, fast finish. The beaming face crossed the finish line with Annabelle, the teddy, on her back. It was great, and she was over the moon with what she'd achieved. Post-race review, she was describing how awful the final miles were and the fact the race went back uphill and across the town. This had me very confused as we skirted the port to the finish line in the 55K and could not envisage where she'd actually gone. It turned out that the race route for the 15K added on a lot of stair climbing near the finish, and I told her was a million miles from what she actually did. Had she known, I'm not sure she'd have started. LOL. I could not be more proud of what she'd achieved, and maybe one day she may toe the line to the Lakeland 50. Who knows? Keep up the great work, guys. Regards, Graham. Shout out, Jill. That is awesome.
Kudos,
Jill. Like consistency. It sounds like hard work. It sounds like great teamwork. And you've done it. And I know she's going to do more. She's going to do more. I can see it. And I'm like going to know a little bit more about the teddy on the back. What's going on with that?
And a big shout out for joining the running club too, Orchard Eagles. Well done. Big kudos, Jill.
We love reading out your stories. So if you have a tale from the trails, then please send it over to hello@tntrails.com. I put a shout out on Facebook. There are a few messages on the Facebook post I put out saying, go on, share the story to each other. So that just intrigues me more. And it definitely sounds like the sort of story Gary and I would love. Totally inappropriate, normally involving some bodily fluids.
Or body parts. I still remember the old tweaking nipples. I can't remember what show that was, what episode it was. I could share that if I could remember. That was super funny. Last week's guest, Danielle, has been super generous and supplied this week's competition. One copy of the beautiful Why We Run book is up for grabs.
I think it's simple what people have to do, but yeah.
Oh, people are doing it. People are doing it.
That is true. You are correct. You have two choices. Number one, follow Tea and Trails on Instagram, or if you're not on Instagram, then maybe subscribe to our YouTube channel. I don't think you have to have a Google account or anything like that. It doesn't cost you anything. People think when you say subscribe, it's like, oh, well, that's going to cost me. It is 100% free to subscribe to a YouTube channel. And when we share this week's show on Instagram or upload it to YouTube, pop the hashtag #WhyWeRun and then tag a friend who inspires you to run. Also, all Patreons get an automatic entry. But yeah, if you want to pop hashtag #WhyWeRun and tag in a friend who inspires you, you can get two entries. Monday the 6th, we will... Are we going to pick... We have to pick a winner at random. It can't be... There's nothing else to do,
is it? It can't be
your
friends, Gary. You know, it has to be anything.
I did tag in Robbo.
Yeah, we saw. We also.
I got called out straight away.
Why they're not? Why tag me in to go, look, Gary doesn't like you the best. We all know that. We all know this is a fickle, one-sided relationship.
But yeah, Monday the 6th, we will pick a winner at random and yeah, we'll share it on the following show.
Gary wants me to beg. He says you've got to beg,
come on, Eddie.
Eddie.
Beg.
Oh, it says about the 5-star reviews.
I'm not fuzzy.
We got none. We've never had none. Well, let's put it down to half term and that people are busy and have got better things to do. I know. Incredible. People are busy and have got better things to do and leave us 5-star review. So if you leave one this week, you are guaranteed to get it read out on the podcast. It's simple. Read it. Maybe I'll just get the kids to write one. Mum, you spend all that time in the back room twittering with Gary and not making our tea. Get off Zoom. But if you have a spare minute, we would greatly appreciate, head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a review. Something about overseas listeners, Gary? What's that?
Yeah, well, I would love it. I'm not too sure. It's the whole, I'm not Gary a marketer yet. I know nothing about the Apple Podcast algorithm, but I think maybe if you're an overseas listener and you leave a review, then that might pop our podcast in front of other people who are from the same country as you. So yeah, it'd be lovely to grow our podcast overseas. So yeah, leave us a 5-star review.
Right, what's occurring? What's occurring this week, Gary?
Tell me, actually, what this was about it was about 6 months since I've had some coaching advice.
Are you joking? Every week you go,
Eddie. Well, two things actually. The sessions are with this pre-marathon plan, it actually has four workouts, but one of those is a long run. I never do that. I'm not going to do three sessions. I'll always do two. I'll pick two out of them. So there is the 15 times 1 minute. They're increasing that now instead of the 10. And then that threshold run moves up to 15 minutes. But then there's also 6 times 2 minutes. Now I've got a 2 minute hill where I live. Do I do 2 minutes on the flat, 6 twos, or do I do 6 twos on the hill?
Listeners, what are we all saying? Everybody's saying you do it on the hill. Do it on the hill. You get bang for your buck. You're going to get your heart rate up quicker. It's a strength workout when perhaps you're not as fit as you are as well. When you're not as fit, it's really hard to get your heart rate up because you literally can't move your legs that fast. So using a hill is a great way to do that. It's also injury prevention and it'll mean you'll run proper, better form as well. So I would definitely do that on a hill, but they're all quite short. So I would say you can do the 15 by 1 minute as well. So you use that as your flat session. And then 16 by 2 as your
well, and the 15 minute threshold run you do.
No, I would probably bin that. I can't see, or I would do that, or you could do that within your long run and do that at the start of your long run. Because is that going to be hard? 15 minutes.
Well, if it's 10k pace, then yeah, I suppose that. If I was doing 10k pace or 10k effort.
Oh my god. Those little kids, they are out again. I said, nobody goes outside while we record because the washing machine is full from when you were outside all this morning and it is so wet. And they are outside.
Oh, she's again. Raging, listeners.
I am absolutely, I've got no more drying space. My drying rack is full. Oh, my God. Don't worry, I'm gonna shatter all their dreams because in half an hour we're going to the dentist.
Oh, but is it a family trip? Is it everyone sits in it?
We do a family trip once a year.
We do that.
I go in with one or two of them. Normally it's girl time. Me and Eve's go in, and she looks in horror as the butcher sabotages my gum. Oh. And then the boys go in, but yeah, we just do it because if Bryn didn't make the appointment, I wouldn't do it. I hate the dentist.
Oh, interesting.
Oh my god, I get. It's because I had a root canal incident about BP before the podcast. It was so bad. Gary, there's still a tiny bit of Neil? No, he was the guy we talked to on that show. There's still a tiny bit of needle in my gum.
Oh my god.
That she left from the root canal. I had such a bad experience. So now when I go in, I just start shaking, like my legs start shaking, my arm, like even though she's just giving me like a clean and I hate it.
I can't believe she's been struck off. That's terrible.
No, she's gone. She's gone. This is a different one. But I've said my eldest one's a bit nervous about going. So I said, we're going to look at it like a race. So like when you're like positive, we're just going to imagine we're like skiing down on a lovely powdered piece. We're not at the dentist with her going, have you flossed? And me going, yeah, yeah, yeah. I love flossing.
Does anybody floss? I've never.
Does anybody? Brenda. Oh my God. Losses for like 15 minutes.
That's a good point. Actually, I might chuck that 15 minutes in my long run. Maybe
you could
like
do that. You could just like, because it's only a 2-hour long run as well, just be mindful of the fueling that I would do a little warm up and then just like 15 minutes. Maybe not like, to me, Z4 would be quite, you know, or you could just use it as a bit like a build into it and then.
Yeah. But who looks at these two hour runs? I know last week my 2-hour run turned into a 2:40 run. So I'll have to modify the route, but they're awesome. Two hours.
I mean, that's great.
Back in the gym again to a bit of mobility and strength work at home, body weight stuff at home, and then maybe two sessions in the gym. And fingers crossed, it's kind of quick turnaround, the old YouTube reviews. I've got some Lone Peak 7s to review, and I can't say, because I want to give it some time. I want to put some miles in. I just don't want to get it on the box.
Yeah.
I want to put some miles in. And a long run, although I do love the Lone Peaks, but maybe they're not a long run shoe like the, say, New Balance were with all the super cushioning. So I'm not too sure if I'll do a long run in them, but yeah, hopefully Tuesday I'll get that out. We will see. But yeah, another busy, busy full on week, but I am enjoying this road running train, and it just feels like I only did the 2:40 because I had a couple of friends, Ray and Dave, asked if I fancied a run on Sunday. I would not have done that runner myself. I just thought, well, it's up the course, do the nature reserve. It's quite a nice run with friends. I would have been pretty faithful to 2 hours if I was on my own. So we'll see where I end up this Sunday. But yeah, it seems to have so much more time.
So much more time, so much more energy. Like training for like a super long run, like the race I'm doing, there's not much energy for anything else left in life because that 4 or 5 hour long run, just the volume of training leaves like that day, that long run day is pretty much then wiped out. Because,
well, for me, for people also on the East Coast, if I'm say training for the Lakeland 100, it involves a drive, a 3-hour return trip to the lakes, and then 4 or 5 hours on the mountains are big, big days, at least. So this road marathon, although I won't feel so nourished from my runs, be a lot quicker, a lot more time. So yeah, that's my week. What about you?
Well, I've done my 4x10 minutes, done my workout. I'm writing my week ahead. So I've actually written my whole plan up to the race now. I can share it with anyone that's interested. It's about as exciting as a wet fish. I choose when to do my workout. So when they either fit in with the kids or how my legs feel. So after the inner thigh incident, I went out this morning. I had about 90 minutes and it was absolutely peeing it down. So I thought, actually, I would prefer to move a bit faster in this. It's so cold and wet. And my legs are like, I'd give my always with the warm up. I like 10, 15 minutes warm up, see how you feel. And you always feel like the first 5, 10 minutes, you're like, no, I can't, no way can I do this session. And then the first bit of the session, you're always like, and then so it all came together beautifully. So I feel I'm like a peacock. I feel proud as a peacock. I've done got that out the way. Back into doing some Tuesday sessions. We're still on half term. So when I get, but I have I potentially could do my long run tomorrow, midweek long run. I know the audacity, because it's minus, it's like minus five then all over the weekend, and it's raining and snowing. And I know what you're all thinking. You're thinking she should go out in that. She should go and practice being out in that. I did 125 hours of the spine race in that. I need a practice. I'm good for that. Thanks.
But it's not like you're swapping it for fantastic weather. It's still not going to be particularly great that you're going out in.
I just really don't want to go out and be pissed wet right through for like four or five. Like, why do I need to practice? I've got the gear. Why do I need to practice that when I could do it when I'd be dry? It'd still be cold, but I just wouldn't be... I just wouldn't be freezing. Also, I'm kind of thinking sensibly, this is a massive excuse, that you don't, every time you get that cold, it's a bit of a knock to the immune system and it does take that longer to recover and stuff. So I'm kind of thinking, so I might do my long run midweek and then the rest of it will be easy miles. Yep, back down the gym. I'm going to give those little side lunges a little bypass and do some single leg
deadlifts.
Fingers
burnt with those.
Those will probably be even worse. Some pretty heavy single leg deadlifts and see the pain. Log in next week to find out which next part of my inner anatomy aches. But yeah, so 5 weeks, 5 weeks, 6 weeks, 5 to 6 weeks. Because the race is starting on a Wednesday, again, it sort of makes the plan a little bit, kind of have to finish halfway through a week. So sort of worked out that now my weeks are starting in my head Wednesday to Wednesday to make it a taper a little bit easier. So now... That's all I'm thinking about. There's no social commitments. There's nothing. And one of the things I'm going to do in this terrible weather in the half term while the kids are pottering around at home is get all my kit laid out, Gary. Get everything laid out.
Do you have a room? Do you have a room you could do that without? I've literally put all my Dragon's Back Race in the front room and just took just made a mess of the front room.
We've got a back room, as you can see. It's like half gym, half office, half running storage, half turbo treadmill. It's a very small room. So you have to, if you want to do squats, you have to move everything else up one way. We make it work. And my final note before we go, the mice are back.
Oh.
Their snack of choice last night.
Oh, yeah, I'm super interested.
Tomato risotto rice.
Ah, oh, there's so much more goodies available.
They didn't see my sunflower seeds. Oh, no, no. They bypassed that. Over the noodles. No, no, we don't want that. Weetabix. No. Let's open this packet. You know, it's like one of those like microwavable. We have like half a shelf of like emergency Snowden rations, and it's like quick tomato rice, and it's one of the kids' favorites. It's great for when like someone comes home and it's like, I'm starving. And the mouse opened it and then obviously went, this tastes good, because it stayed there the whole, I mean, it must have eaten half the packet. It's carb loaded. So tonight I said, I'm sitting
well, it needs now some pH 1500 and it'll be ready for an ultra.
Must be so, yeah, it's probably quite salty, that rice. It must be like, I'm so dehydrated. So there are 2 years we haven't had a mouse. Do you remember mouse attack? We were absolutely
crazy
with them. And only yesterday Bryn went, no snow again this year, because they always say if there's no mice, then there's no snow. And the mouse, the minute it starts snowing, the mouse comes in for his tomato rice. So yeah, tonight that cupboard gets the mouse trap. Sorry, not sorry. And the mouse trap is not actually a mouse trap. What we do is we shove the cupboard shut with the breadboard, which is so heavy because it crawls up, the doors don't quite shut on the larder. So it gets underneath. So we've got...
They'll find a way, and these mice, they're super clever.
They'll just find something else. They'll find someone's secret stash of sweeties from somewhere. But
they'll have your mint and lime chews or your Bella Forte bars.
No. Those are set. I would be absolutely raging. They can eat as much tomato rice as they want. So there we go. That's it. Another week. Hopefully, by the time we speak next week, I'll be even more compact and even stronger.
Hench. I think that's it. I think we're done, Eddie, for another week. Thanks for tuning in. And thanks to all our partners and patrons too. We are truly grateful to every one of you. Be kind to your future self, breathe and believe. And don't forget to like, subscribe, follow and give us a share. Tell your mates, tell your running buddies, just tell everyone. Make some reels on Instagram stories and tag us in too.
Well done, everybody, for listening to The Bitter End. You're awesome. We hope you have the best of weekends and weeks. Best of luck to everyone towing the line. There's not many races out there, but there is a couple. Anyone involved with organising the Ultra Trails, Chalkland Way Ultra. Bit early to be checking the weather app, but it doesn't look too bad. I don't know. Isn't there a named storm, Carrie, coming? Well, if you're a bit nervous, if you're not sure what to do during the race, yeah, just pop on this podcast, UK's number one trail running podcast, and let us help you along the way. My name is Eddie Sutton.
And I'm Gary Thwaites.
And that was episode 45 of Tea and Trails.